Contented Media presents Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto. An original podcast series with Mark Hunter and Arthur Van Pelt.
Craig Wright is an Australian computer scientist at the heart of a multi-billion dollar battle to see who owns Bitcoin. Not the cryptocurrency, the brand. Wright has been trying to get himself recognized as Bitcoin's pseudonymous creator, Satoshi Nakamoto, for over 7 years. But having failed in the court of public opinion, he has recently taken his battle to bricks and mortar courts as he attempts to sue his way to being awarded ownership of the Bitcoin name and the trillion-dollar ecosystem that comes with it. Wright's supporters claim he is undoubtedly the creator of Bitcoin, while his detractors believe his claim to the Bitcoin throne to be based on nothing but a phalanx of lies and forgeries, supported and funded by a billionaire casino magnate. Throughout this series, myself and my co-host, semi-professional Craig Wright debunker Arthur Van Pelt, will take you through the incredible story of Craig Stephen Wright and his attempts to claim ownership of the financial revolution that is Bitcoin. This is not a story about Bitcoin, blockchain, or cryptocurrencies. This is a story of David versus Goliath, of the extraordinary lengths that Craig Wright is going to try and seize ownership of the Bitcoin brand, and the damage that is being done to regular people along the way. This is Episode 9, Coins Will Move. Hello and welcome to Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto, the podcast that does indeed lift the lid on the efforts of Mr. Craig Stephen Wright to gain acceptance as Bitcoin's creator, Satoshi Nakamoto. My name is Mark Hunter, author, blockchain writer, and podcast host, and it is my job to guide you through the morass of events, claims, counterclaims, lies, thefts, and lawsuits that all go into making up this, at times, unbelievable story. This is the last episode in the series, concluding a story that has seen us traverse more than a decade of goings-on, both real and imaginary, and ending with a case that threatened to bring Craig Wright's entire empire crumbling down. Arthur is with me for the last time in this series to light our way through the labyrinth that is Craig Wright's Satoshi story. Arthur, are you sitting comfortably?
Yes, Mark, I am. Thank you.
Then let's begin.
Let's go.
In the last episode, we discussed the vagaries of the blockbuster Kleinman vs. Wright trial, which concluded in December 2021 after almost 4 years of arguments, filings, motions, and a mountain of evidence. We ended the last episode with the entire tangled mess being handed over to the jury of 3 men and 7 women, whose job it was to try and make sense of what they had heard over the 3-week trial and deliver a verdict on whether, among other things, Craig Wright had stolen around 500,000 Bitcoin and some $175 billion worth of intellectual property from his deceased best friend, Dave Kleinman. Before we get into the verdict and its ramifications, let's go through exactly what the jury were deciding on. There were 7 categories involved in the case, equating to some 25 questions the jury would have to answer, as well as stating amounts to be awarded to the estate of Dave Kleinman or the company at the heart of the matter, W&K, if required. Arthur, what were the key things that the jury would be deciding on?
It took a bit before they came to a definitive list, because they started with a complaint and then an amended complaint, and I think even a second amended complaint. And that second amended complaint ended with 7 accusations. Breach of partnership, breach of fiduciary duty, fraud, constructive fraud, civil theft, unjust enrichment, and last but not least, conversion.
The Kleinman's head lawyer, Vel Friedman, was said to have been confident that a verdict was going to arrive on the day the decision was handed to the jury, but given the complexity of the case and the amount of evidence jurors would have to sift through, this was unlikely. Indeed, Tuesday 23rd of November came and went with no verdict, and with Thanksgiving coming 2 days later, deliberations ceased until the following Monday. Monday 29th finally saw some action, with a note from the jury asking the judge for a simple definition of unjust enrichment. This referred to questions 17 through 19, suggesting that they were working their way through quickly and would soon have a verdict. They then returned with more requests for clarification. How much of the intellectual property did W&K still have under the estate, and did they need to select separate awarding amounts for Bitcoin and IP? These questions were further suggestions that the jury was on the verge of finding for the plaintiff in a number of areas. How did the pro-Craig Wright media react to this update? CoinGeek, which had been releasing daily propaganda updates that fawned over every syllable uttered by Wright during his testimonies, completely ignored the jury questions in its report of this day. Instead, it chose to rail against Bitcoin supporters for turning Bitcoin into a Ponzi scheme cult, and saying that the reason people don't want to believe Craig Wright is Satoshi Nakamoto is that they cannot accept a living person standing to disprove their belief system. Arthur, of the many Bitcoin supporters you know, how many do you suspect of secretly not wanting Wright to be Satoshi because they don't want their belief system to be disproved?
Yeah, well, actually no one, Mark. And I'm quite well connected in the Bitcoin space because during my research over the years, I've met a lot of OGs, the old timers in the Bitcoin community, who have been communicating with Satoshi Nakamoto, who have coded with him. They helped him build the Bitcoin infra from the original Bitcoin.org website to the earliest exchanges, who helped him with testing, who did the earliest known transactions with him on the Bitcoin blockchain. Without any exception, they have all declared in public that they simply don't believe Craig is Satoshi based on their experience with the real Satoshi. So yeah, most of them choose to ignore him. But now that he is running some lawsuits, there is of course some more attention for him. But I'm pretty sure that if you ask, for example, the 200 million Bitcoin users worldwide, yeah, that hardly anyone knows who he is.
Law 360 reporter Carolina Bellardo, who was on hand every day for the trial and live-tweeted the key events, revealed that the jury had handed another note to Judge Bloom on the 29th, which said, "Many of us do not feel comfortable adjudicating an amount." This was an interesting turn of events, but hardly surprising, given that Wright had valued the IP at over $250 billion, meaning the jury was being asked to decide how much of that, as well as how much of the multi-billion dollar Bitcoin valuation, to award to the Kleinman estate based on circumstantial evidence that, ironically, was itself rooted in the lies of Craig Wright. Wright himself had been banging on in the lead-up to the trial that if a court ordered him to move Bitcoin from the Tulip Trust, then he would do so, but only with a court order. He referenced this again on October 13th when he told his BSV fan club that there is no chance that the coins are not moving by court order. Arthur, Wright supporters have been waiting for this court case so he could move the Tulip Trust coins and therefore prove he is Satoshi, and Wright has been saying that the coins will move whatever happens. Did Judge Bloom ever mention a court order to move the Bitcoin?
No, of course not. Moving coins is totally irrelevant in or during or after this lawsuit. Craig will have to pay damages, if any, in US dollars only for one or more of the awarded accusations. And there is no mention of Bitcoins that should move anywhere. So it's never going to happen.
It seems, then, that Wright's promise that coins will move from the Satoshi addresses is likely to never materialise, but no doubt the BSV community will swallow whatever excuse he sells them. The fact is that, if he really was serious about doing this, Wright could just get permission from the Tulip Trust trustees to move some coins out and back again, as he almost did in 2016. But then, as he has said since it became convenient to his cause, ownership of private keys does not denote identity, so moving the coins would prove nothing anyway. C'est la vie. The high hopes of a verdict on November 29th were dashed when the day ended with no further updates, and the following day yielded the same result. A hung jury was looking eminently possible. Indeed, the following day, December 1st, saw the jury report that, unfortunately, we cannot come to a conclusion and we cannot all agree on a verdict on any of the questions. 4 years' worth of time and money was on the verge of ending in the mistrial that Craig Wright has said there was zero chance of happening. But Judge Bloom issued the jury with an Allen charge in an attempt to find a resolution. This was a request that the jury go back and try again to come to a conclusion, although it stopped short of a demand that they do so. When Thursday, December 2nd came and went with no further communication from the jury, things were looking cautiously optimistic that they might be making headway, and when Friday the 3rd ended in the same way, it seemed the Allen charge may have had its intended effect. Monday 6th of December arrived with everyone hopeful of a verdict, and within 1 hour of deliberation starting, it finally arrived. Wright was adjudged to have committed conversion, which is defined as the unauthorized possession of personal property causing curtailment of the owner's possession or alteration of the property. The jury ruled that Wright's conversion warranted a $100 million award to W&K Informational Defense rather than to Ira Kleiman, and Wright quickly began the inevitable twisting of this narrative. Not happy with being cleared of all counts of fraud and other theft, Wright was determined to explain how the jury, according to him, had acquitted me of all counts. How did he try and do this, Arthur?
Yeah, this was pretty hilarious. Craig tried to give his view of what conversion means. Let me read it for you. To give an example of the tort of conversion, I would like you to think of a self-storage facility. Imagine that Alice places goods in the facility run by Bob. For some reason, there is a fire at the facility and the goods owned by Alice are damaged. This is a form of conversion of Alice goods by Bob. If Alice wants to recover the loss of her goods, she will sue under the tort of conversion. You will note that Bob has not done anything that is necessarily negligent or intentional. Although this is wrong against the goods owned by Alice and hence wrong against Alice, the fact that Bob has a bailment over Alice's goods means that he is responsible, and as such, Alice can sue for the value of her goods that are being bailed. And if you think that is theft, then you don't know what is theft. There is no aspect of intention included in conversion. Now, let me tell you, what Craig has wrong here is that the aspect of intention is always present in the process of conversion. There might be intention before the conversion starts, or there is certainly intention during the conversion process. So at all times, it remains conversion, which is an illegal act of stealing. And in that sense, conversion is a specific type of theft without being called theft, of course. So the best explanation that I came across is what my online friend Crypto Devil, he tweeted just after the verdict, conversion is an intentional tort consisting of taking with the intent of exercising over the chattel an ownership inconsistent with the real owner's right of possession, and its equivalent in criminal law include larceny or theft. I can explain to you what illegal conversion Craig Wright was actually performing with W&K that was penalized with no less than 100 million. Craig fraudulently overhauled W&K, which was an IT cybersecurity company in 2011, and that failed to land 4 homeland security projects that Craig and Dave wrote in early 2011. And yeah, by the way, these 4 proposals they wrote for Homeland Security, they had absolutely nothing to do with Bitcoin whatsoever. Now, because they failed to land it, W&K dissolved in 2012, never had any business done. But in 2013, after Dave Kleiman died in April, he took a few months to think about his cunning plans. And starting July, he changed W&K to a Bitcoin intellectual property company. He made false statements. He created backdated forgeries for in total 57 million. And in this case, this is Australian dollars that he filed in the Australian Supreme Court as claims. And because the court did not do any fact finding, these claims were, and it was a miracle if you ask me, they were awarded. So these fraudulently obtained valuation of non-existing Bitcoin intellectual property was then used to further advance Craig's Australian tax fraud in the years after. But in the end, ATO didn't buy it. And in one of their reports, we find the following quote. Moreover, we do not accept that the NSWSC, which means the New South Wales Supreme Court proceedings, resulted in any acquisition by you of software and or intellectual property from W&K, or any acquisition by you of software and or intellectual property from W&K for the value asserted. The NSWSC did not consider any evidence or make any findings of fact as to the existence or value of the software you purportedly acquired from W&K as a result of these proceedings. Now, there you go. This is the whole scheme of conversion, which was in the end penalized by the jury in Miami of a whopping $100 million.
With the jury essentially ruling that it didn't believe a Bitcoin partnership, no writing white paper, no building and no releasing Bitcoin, no mining together, between Dave Kleinman and Craig Wright existed, Wright had avoided having to pay out hundreds of billions of dollars to the Kleinman estate. He was, naturally, a happy man.
Thank you everyone for all your support over all of the years. This has been a remarkably good outcome and I feel completely vindicated. Next, there are still more fights. We are going to make everything change from cryptocurrency to digital cash the way it's meant to be. My original invention is coming back. I'm not going anywhere. I'm here for the long term and I'm here for the fight. And each victory we get takes us closer to a world where digital cash is used. Not a global casino, but real digital cash, where people in third world countries can make money, hold money, and trade. Thank you.
As is often the case in such outcomes, both sides saw the result as a win. Ira Kleinman's head lawyer, Vel Friedman, focused on the nature of the award, saying, "We are immensely gratified that our client, W&K Information Defense Research LLC, has been awarded $100 million, reflecting that Craig Wright wrongfully took Bitcoin-related assets from W&K. This verdict sets a historical precedent in the innovative and transformative industry of cryptocurrency and blockchain." Having been silent on his BSV Slack forum since being warned over his antics by the judge, Wright vented 2 weeks' worth of pent-up emotion, saying, "The jury has found I am not a fraud," and making several other statements that are well worth going into. Wright started by saying that there would be no appeal, then discussed the $100 million payout in terms of the aborted settlement discussions the parties entered into in 2019, saying that the settlement offer at top was $3.2 billion total, $225 million cash, mostly in BTC. The $100 million is a win. Arthur, $3.2 billion is a lot of money. Why didn't Ira Kleinman accept that in Bitcoin from Craig Wright in 2019?
Yeah, let's presume that happened. But my guess is that Ira Kleinman is very well aware that those large holdings of Bitcoins only exist in Craig's dreams. But again, this is only Craig's claim. Ira's counsel mentioned on Twitter that the $100 million awarded is higher than any serious settlement amount they ever received. So, yeah, I have no reason to think that Ira's counsel is bluffing. So I really question if this $3.2 billion has ever been offered to Ira Kleinman.
Wright next tackled the subject of the intellectual property, which he said the jury had proved valued it at $200+ million in 2013. He also added that the ATO wanted to say it had no value. A jury just crushed every attack on me from the ATO ever. Arthur, how could an IP valuation from a jury in 2021 crush years' worth of accusations in a variety of areas from the ATO, including the formation of the Tulip Trust, supercomputers and backdated company appointments?
This is typically another Craig Wright spin to make him look good, because as it appears to me, the jury has picked a somewhat random number, or an average number, from all the official valuations that they were shown in the exhibits. And these valuations, they varied between $1.5 million, which was the amount that Robert McGregor paid in 2015 for Craig Wright's intellectual property, and possibly Craig's bogus claim in the New South Wales Supreme Court filings of $57 million. And there were a few valuation reports in the exhibits that were made around 2014 with numbers around the $300 million mark. Yeah, again, this is a guess of me. Jury deliberations are unfortunately not made public and we will probably never know how they got to these $100 million.
Finally, Wright reiterated his desire to benefit the world's poorest people, something he made mention of again in his series of messages to his BSV group, saying that 98% of all Bitcoin I and my family own, the Satoshi coins, are in a covenant to onboard 5 billion people into the digital economy, starting from the poorest billion and working up. Regardless of whether it constituted a win or a loss, Wright couldn't ignore the fact that he was on the hook for $100 million, and this might not be all. Pre- and post-hearing costs, plus interest which accrues every day he doesn't pay, could see the figure rise to some $150 million. So where would that money come from? It couldn't come from his African Education Fund, because this was the Bitcoin supposedly lost in the pineapple hack, which we of course know was in fact nothing more than Bitcoin stolen from Mt. Gox in March 2011. If Wright has reserved the Tulip Trust Bitcoins for the world's poor, while his billions in other Bitcoin were stolen from him in 2020, and countless other billions in Bitcoin is supposedly locked up in trusts owned by his wife, how on earth is he going to pay Ira Kleiman? At this point, it's worth noting that at various times in the past few years, Wright has doubted his ability to ever get his hands on the coins, including stating in a deposition for this trial that it's a very big if as to whether he will ever do so. He has also stated over the years that he doesn't care if he ever gets access to the coins because it's too much money, that he is never selling them, that he no longer has contact with the trustees needed to approve a move, that a court order will force them to move, and that he doesn't need to move the coins to prove he is Satoshi. We can now add to this the fact that his loans from Calvin Air are backed by the Tulip Trust coins, and that the coins are now apparently under a covenant to onboard 5 billion people into a digital monetary system. Arthur, Wright has been talking about the importance and purpose of these Tulip Trust coins for years now, and with this result he's put huge pressure on himself to move them. If, as we suspect, he can't do this, how is he going to get out of it?
Yeah, there is no doubt whatsoever in my mind that no Bitcoin will ever move, because Craig is saying so. So what is likely to happen is that he will manage to grab the, what I would call the fake Toshi stash, not the Satoshi stash on Bitcoin, but the fake Toshi stash of his altcoin project BSV. Did you know that they already made preparations in the BSV node software to freeze BSV tokens? And that means that they can block transactions from the nodes, they can block transactions in the blockchain of the BSV tokens. It only takes such a blacklist tool to be unleashed on the list of presumed addresses that Satoshi mined back in the days. Let's say 1 million BSV, then create 1 million new BSV tokens from thin air, an appointment to Craig Wright somehow, with the private keys and all. Now, on the highly centralized BSV chain, they will no doubt get this done, because Craig's buddy Calvin Air, he basically owns the whole BSV infra. BTC is very censorship resistant and completely decentralized, this will be completely impossible to perform.
So, bearing in mind that BSV is supposed to be Satoshi's original vision, where was this blacklist tool in the white paper?
There is none. In fact, Satoshi has said that Bitcoin transactions should be irreversible within 2 hours. That was his aim. So, like I said, it should be censorship resistant.
The conclusion of the trial wasn't the first time Wright had talked about his plans for enriching the world's poor. In July 2019, he appeared at a Financial Times event where he told the audience, "I have about $8 billion worth of Bitcoin and I'm donating them. Not as a joke. I'm giving them away. I want them to go to education. So my BTC are not going to go to me. I'll keep my Bitcoin, the Bitcoin I created, the Bitcoin I still work on. But the BTC, the whatever forks, I don't really care. In 2020, I'm going to give them away. I'm going to give it so that people in Africa can be educated, so that people in South America can be educated." Now, as we know, something akin to a Mossad squad supposedly broke into Wright's home in February 2020 and stole all the Bitcoin earmarked for charity in the famous pineapple hack. On a side note, British cyclist Mark Cavendish had his house broken into in November 2021 and, in association with the police, put out a public appeal days later for help in catching the intruders, who made off with some luxury watches and designer suitcases. Cavendish publicised the incident number and a phone number for people to call to report anything suspicious that they may have seen or heard on the night of the break-in. Craig Wright claims he had $1.1 billion worth of digital assets stolen from him in an Ocean's 11-style operation, a robbery which at today's valuation of $5.2 billion makes it the single biggest heist of all time. And yet he has never asked for any assistance from the public in catching the offenders, and the most lucrative crime in world history never even made the local paper. Odd. Fortunately for the world's poor, with Wright retaining access to the Tulip Trust fortune, their salvation was back on the table. On the subject of his plan, Wright told his followers the day after the verdict, "I have a plan. It is not altruism or collectivist. If you want that, screw you. What all this has taught me is that corrupt assholes twist nice. Screw nice. I tried it. I am hard, I am angry, and I am bloody going to change society. Don't like it? Musk wants to go to Mars. Suck him off and f*** off. Nice Craig has left the building. Efficient and hard Craig is back. We have 5 billion people to onboard, starting from the world's poorest and working up. Nice doesn't cut it. If that's not charitable spirit, I don't know what is. It's also worth noting here that Calvin Ayer and many in the BSV community have long predicted that Bitcoin will either die completely or, at the very least, go to zero any day now. Arthur, given that these 5 billion people are dependent on the Bitcoin price remaining high to fund their onboarding, in actively trying to crush Bitcoin to zero, aren't Wright and Ayer undermining this entire plan?
Yeah, isn't that called a catch-22 in the English-speaking part of the world?
Yeah.
Anyway, how to use coins for these plans that you cannot even prove that you own, let alone that you are able to move them? It's madness, Mark. Empty promises, as we've seen so many times before already from our Craig Wright.
The response to the verdict from the BSV camp was instant and predictable. While Wright was proclaiming his innocence, his cheerleaders were taking to Twitter to state that the judgment proved once and for all that Wright was Satoshi, when of course it proved nothing of the sort. Court reporter Carolina Bellardo expressed her frustration when she told this podcast on the day of the verdict, "There are a number of people who also think this verdict means Wright equals Satoshi, and I just don't know how to explain that it doesn't." Calvin Ayer, meanwhile, insisted that the result kept up Wright's undefeated record in court, which was a flat-out lie. Firstly, because Wright hadn't won, but also because Wright already lost cases in 2006 and 2020. The BSV token naturally pumped too, jumping from $117 to $170, before beginning its retrace to $120 a little over 24 hours later. Wright's cause was aided by mainstream media outlets, who nearly all repeated the claim that Wright had won and held on to his Bitcoin fortune, which of course they had no idea almost certainly doesn't exist. Wright's camp pounced on this, with Calvin Ayer in particular calling on BSV supporters to push the news far and wide, in a clear attempt to push the narrative that Wright was Satoshi, despite most of the reports continuing to call Wright the self-proclaimed Bitcoin creator. Arthur, this was clearly part of the BSV strategy, wasn't it? Because just hours after the verdict, Calvin Ayer made one of his famous predictions, saying that he expected institutional adoption of BSV to rocket on the back of the verdict, while Wright said he had already had several meetings. Can you explain how they planned to use the verdict and mainstream media coverage in this way?
Yeah, it all boils down to the original plans of June 2015 when Craig Wright was bailed out, Mark. They hoped that Craig being accepted as Satoshi Nakamoto would bring all the attention to him and his patents so that they could sell it for billions as original Satoshi work. But yeah, we can only see how the string of failures gets longer and longer. The December 2015 docs failed, the signing sessions in May 2016 failed. In 2018, Roger Ver left Camp Craig Wright, calling him a liar and a fraud. Yeah, and now we have a verdict basically calling Craig Wright a thief, who has to pay a stunning $100 million for stealing. And nothing in the verdict that indicates that Craig Wright is now ruled as being Satoshi Nakamoto. So, yeah, whatever they planned, it appears that it's not materializing yet, because people on decision-making positions of enterprises and governments are not all stupid, you know.
Something else that emerged from the Kleinman versus Wright case was the destination of the award if it ever gets paid. The jury was asked whether any awards they made should go to Ira Kleinman or W&K Info Defense, the company Wright stole the intellectual property from. The jury said that W&K should get it, which immediately leads to another set of complications, which Wright referred to in his BSV channel post-verdict when discussing why he wouldn't appeal, saying, "I will not take away from my ex-wife who has been defrauded of control of W&K by Kleinman. Ira has defrauded her and others. She will go for punitive now. We expect Ira to owe the defrauded true owners of W&K $200 million plus." This claim refers to another court case currently underway involving the Wrights and the Kleinmans, which is another complex and hotly debated topic. In July 2020, Wright's ex-wife Lynn filed a lawsuit against Ira Kleiman on the grounds that when W&K was formed in February 2011, it was done so between herself, Dave Kleiman, and Craig Wright. To keep another long and complex story short, Lynn argued that Ira Kleiman had no legal right to sue Craig Wright through W&K because he didn't have the requisite level of control, despite stepping in to replace Dave Kleiman after his death. The ramifications of this are that in 2022, a probate court will decide who actually owns W&K, and therefore the $100 million that Craig Wright is supposed to be paying it. Interestingly, in October 2020, Lynn filed a petition to declare Ira Kleiman be barred from suing Craig on these grounds, but this didn't go to plan. Instead, 2 months later, the judge put a freeze on all actions in the case, to be resumed after the Kleiman vs. Craig Wright case had concluded. Lynn's case is not to be confused with a third case related to Dave Kleiman and the Tulip Trust, which was filed in April 2021 and saw Wright's current wife, Ramona Watts, also suing Ira Kleiman on the basis that in wiping Dave Kleiman's hard disks, Ira removed important data and documents relating to the Tulip Trust, claiming that as a result, the Tulip Trust has suffered substantial damages in the form of bitcoins it can no longer access. This statement brings up a whole host of other issues. How much have they lost access to, and how long have they known about this? Does Calvin Ayer know? Do the world's poorest billion people know? In May 2021, Vel Friedman, again defending Ira Kleiman, filed a motion to dismiss the case which is yet to be ruled on, calling Watts' claim a sham and based on the same lies as the other claims made by Craig Wright. Arthur, what are the key things to note from these two claims?
For me, the two key things are that Craig is always kicking the can down the road in a desperate effort to frustrate his opponent in court. And these cases also highlight how shameless he is in playing the confidence game with his false claims, forgeries, and abuse of largely innocent people that he bamboozles.
Wright continued to unload on a variety of topics to his BSV group after the trial, boasting about how he had been ahead of everyone else all the way through, oddly doing a turn as an imaginary reporter in the process. Craig, is it true that you were creating inventions during the court trial? While everyone else was doing their best to barely keep up, you were thinking up new things to patent? Yes, it kept me occupied. Wow, what a guy. Wright also promised that now we clean up each lie in court, adding that the media will learn or the media will burn. Arthur, what do you think Craig Wright meant by this vague threat?
Yeah, does this remind you a little of Donald Trump, Mark?
Yet again.
Yeah, exactly. But Donald Trump also regularly called out the fake news. But yeah, Craig is nowhere near a powerful spot like Donald Trump, of course. And Craig's tone and language is more aggressive too, but the goal is somewhat the same, distraction and deception. Craig is known to have stated other threats like bringing nuclear Armageddon to the industry and having been sent by God as a punishment, things like that.
Wright also solved another mystery in the days after the verdict. His backdated purchase of Tulip Trading in 2014 wasn't dodgy at all, because the company that founded Tulip Trading Limited in 2011 and later sold it to him was itself owned by Craig Wright. Yes, Wright had owned Tulip Trading Limited all along due to his ownership of its controlling company, Equator Consultants. He just forgot to tell everyone that he already owned it. For over 10 years, it had completely slipped his mind, even when he was being hammered over the purchasing of Tulip Trading by Kleiman's lawyers, and he only remembered once there was no one around to question him. Memory is a fickle thing. Of course, this theory completely ignores the question of why Wright would rebuy a limited company he already owns, and why, as the purchasing email trail shows, he asked the agent, Dennis Miyaka of Abacus, for a list of aged shelf companies to choose from, rather than asking directly for Tulip Trading Limited, given that that was the name it had gone under for the past 3 years. Wright, naturally, put this down to the long-standing hacking theory, or, alternatively, that the emails were forgeries. This, however, means that either someone went to the effort of buying Tulip Trading Limited for Craig Wright using his own payment details in 2014, or the whole thing was a fiction, which would mean that Tulip Trading Limited is still owned by Equator Consultants. It would also mean that someone faked not just Craig Wright's end of the conversation, but also Dennis Miyaka's, as well as faking the company certificates that came with the emails. Seeing as Craig Wright strongly denied buying Tulip Trading Limited in 2014 when cross-examined in the Clyman trial, it seems his new theory is indeed that Equator Consultants still owns the Tulip Trust, something he has only revealed after the case is over. Wright also claimed after the case that the earlier version of this was also mine, presumably referring to another incarnation of Equator Consultants which he doesn't name, as well as Savannah Limited, one of the Tulip Trust trustees, which he said he also owned. It should also be noted that evidence of the existence of any of these companies is almost impossible to obtain today. Wright never gives identification numbers for these companies, and online searches come up fruitless, with none of the companies registered on the Seychelles Business Directory, despite having supposedly been around for over 10 years. The only known address for Equator Consultants returns a list of several companies, but Equator Consultants is not among them. Interestingly, Wright also claims that Dennis Miyaka worked for at least two of his other companies, including Savannah Limited, and was trustee of Tulip Trust 2 during this time. Yet, on the famous printout of Miyaka's LinkedIn page that Wright tried to use as evidence of Miyaka's qualifications, Miyaka only mentions his time working for Abacus, which is backed up by email evidence in his sale of Tulip Trading Limited to Wright in 2014, and does not reference his time working for Savannah or Equator Consultants, despite him supposedly being a director of the latter in 2016. Arthur, have you ever come across any evidence that these companies actually exist?
No, not at all. To be honest, I tried, gave up quickly when nothing came up. But and another reason for that is that Dennis Miyaka is only one of many of Craig's sock puppets that he is using to uphold his schemes. But can be said, though, is that Craig is changing again a previous narrative, again with no evidence whatsoever, in again a desperate attempt to fill some gaps that are uncovered after the trial.
Also, he testified to Judge Reinhardt that he was not a Tulip Trust trustee and that he had asked Dave Clyman to distance him from the whole thing. And yet, with these new statements, he now occupies, either directly or indirectly, five of the six trustee slots on the 2012 Deed of Trust document, and a company under his control signed off on it.
Yeah, it means that he is in control of the whole thing, directly or indirectly, and whatever the situation asks, he just changes role instantly, and he will likely create the necessary paperwork afterwards to support the changes if needed.
Among Wright's other outbursts was his claim that the terms claims to create, self-proclaimed, and self-professed, as used by almost all media outlets to describe Wright's relationship to Satoshi Nakamoto, counted as defamation, suggesting that he was gearing up to sue any person or publication that dared to state he wasn't Bitcoin's creator. If past experience is anything to go by, this is a distinct possibility. Wright also confessed to being the issuer of Bitcoin, something we have covered in a previous episode, and which is related to his claim to own all Bitcoin produced past, present, and future. He also announced that he was setting up a project to put the full story out without any redaction regarding his battles with the ATO, including pages from hundreds of files relating to his more than decade-long fight. However, given that Wright himself argued in court in this very case that his computers and servers have been repeatedly hacked since the dawn of time, sometimes to implicate him as being Satoshi Nakamoto, this instantly undermines any credibility in documentation coming from his files. Arthur, linked to this and looking back at the strategy adopted by the defence in the Clyman case, do you think it's fair to say that Clyman's team hampered their own efforts by relying on the fraud claims? The defence was always going to say that if the fraud was that widespread, then it could easily be applied to the plaintiff's evidence, and it seems to have worked for them, doesn't it?
Yeah, most certainly indeed. But that's why at least I think the breach of partnership and the breach of fiduciary duty were not honored by the jury. Because as Craig's counsel made perfectly clear in their Chewbacca defense, plaintiff's case was almost fully based on fraudulent evidence and Craig's lies about a non-existing partnership. There's even a firm case to be made that during the deliberations, the jury also rejected Craig's false claim to be Satoshi, to be fair. As it was directly and inextricably linked to the false partnership claims of Craig. But by the way, talking about both the fraud-related accusations, namely fraud and constructive fraud, these were not honored either. Reason for that is that the actual fraud that Craig was performing in that era, late 2013 up till and including 2015, was actually the ATO tax fraud, So all forgeries and false claims have to be seen in that light, and that's exactly what the jury did in the end, I think.
From these early exchanges, it is clear that the result has left Wright emboldened to continue his path of destruction within the crypto space. He is more entrenched than ever, with his bellicose language and threats to everyone from media outlets to developers of competing chains, reinforcing his desire to rule over the crypto space like a god, dispersing punishment to those who he feels aren't paying him enough homage. The irony of Calvin Ayer calling Bitcoin supporters the ones stuck in a cult and worshipping a deity is bordering on the incredulous. In truth, however, the case itself didn't really change much in relation to Wright's prior claims and his future plans. The headlines were all about the amounts of money involved, and understandably so, but for those with knowledge of the long-running scam that Wright seems to have been perpetrating since 2013, the case simply reinforced what they already knew. For Wright supporters, who will find a way to skirt round any negative evidence put before them, it merely reinforced what they knew. Wright created Bitcoin alone, and any evidence to the contrary is false. They, and Wright, claim that the fact that the jury ruled there was no fraud means that Wright has never committed any fraud, which is not true. The jury was asked to decide if Wright defrauded Dave Kleinman. They were not asked to rule on the multiple types of fraud Wright is suspected of perpetrating over the years to various parties. Similarly, the fraud ruling has emboldened Wright's camp to strengthen its claims that Wright has been the victim of a years-long persecution by former employees, then developers, then corporations backed by MasterCard, and then Ira Kleinman. The jury most certainly did not rule on this, and there has been zero evidence presented to back up these theories. The jury was also not asked to give their reasons why they voted the way they did. This is important given that the closing argument by Wright's legal team focused on the fact that the jury shouldn't trust any of the evidence presented to support the plaintiff's argument, which therefore included any evidence that Wright created Bitcoin. It could well be that the jury followed this advice and, having been forced by the judge to come to a conclusion, decided that the foundation of the entire case was fraudulent, including Wright's claims to be Satoshi, and so ruled that way. Arthur, Wright's team criticised Kleinman's lawyers for cherry-picking truth from fiction, but they're doing the same thing here, aren't they? They're claiming that the jury believed the evidence that Wright was Satoshi, but they didn't believe that he had a partnership with Dave Kleinman. In fact, we have no idea what they believed.
I strongly disagree with that, Mark. Of course, we have no ruling about Craig, if he is or isn't Satoshi, as it was explicitly included in the lawsuit. But try to imagine, Ira's counsel relentlessly defended the claim that there was a Satoshi partnership between Craig and Dave. They threw all the evidence of that in Craig's face and then debunked it as forgeries and false claims to prove Craig's fraud. Now add Craig's counsel's Chewbacca defense, where they even dare to suggest that Ira Kleinman must have thought that Craig Wright is a fantasist, having built, and here I quote, a stinking pile of lies and forgeries. It makes no sense. And this quote was repeated several times during the closing arguments. So yeah, I cannot escape the strong thought that, as I said earlier, the jury had no chance of separating both the Satoshi and the partnership claims. So they both declared them as false. But yeah, again, the rulings were only related to the partnership breaches, of course.
The Kleinman versus Wright case was a sideshow to the main event of Wright's claim to be Satoshi. A sideshow that has been blown up to become the headline act because of the huge sums quoted. Objectively, however, the Kleinman versus Wright case actually offers us very little of real value when we consider Wright's claims to be Satoshi. The jury didn't rule on it, the judges didn't entertain discussions on it, and only a fraction of the evidence produced was even related to it. Wright supporters have taken his Bitcoin creation story as gospel, which of course they would do, passing it off as uncontested evidence rather than hearsay, claiming that anything else to the contrary is fraudulent and part of a conspiracy to silence their leader. If that isn't a cult, we'd love to know what is. Even if Wright had lost on every count, unless the jury had specifically said that Wright wasn't Bitcoin's creator, which was never going to happen because it wasn't the subject of the case, Wright's team was always going to claim victory in this manner. Even if the jury had broken ranks and made this claim, Wright's camp would have said that the jury verdict is merely an opinion and not a matter of fact. And yet, when the same argument is made against Wright's claims, critics are told to cope. And so, with the conclusion of the Kleinman trial, we reach the conclusion of the Craig Wright narrative, for now. What we have learnt over the past 9 episodes does not constitute the end, however. Far from it. Wright has court cases pending in 2022 that will have a much larger bearing on his claims to be Satoshi Nakamoto and his attempts to destroy the Bitcoin ecosystem and replace it with his own BSV vehicle. What we've done so far is merely provide background for what is happening in 2022 and beyond, giving listeners the context against which they can set the actions of Craig Wright, a chance to peek behind the curtain and see what he's really doing and why. Arthur, if it's possible, how would you summarise what we've learned over the course of this series, and how do you think it impacts on what's to come?
What I hope that our listeners have learned is that there is no proof whatsoever that Craig Wright is Satoshi Nakamoto. Everything that connects Craig to Satoshi are claims only supported by a massive trunk of forgeries created after April 2013 when Dave Kleiman died. Of course, Craig knew about Bitcoin before April 2013. He wrote about Bitcoin in July and August 2011 in the comment section of his articles on the Conversation website. And we know that by the end of 2012, he developed the ideas of a Bitcoin bank with Jamie Wilson and his wife Ramona, which led to the startup of Hotwire in 2013. And in April 2013, he bought his first Bitcoin on Mt. Gox. And being red-pilled as he was, he even wrote 4 articles about Bitcoin on his blog. But at the same time, in his In Memoriam video and blog post, straight after the death of his friend Dave Kleiman, there was no mention of Bitcoin whatsoever. So that partnership never happened. Not even the slightest hint of that we got around April 2013. So then Craig started picking random Bitcoin addresses from the rich list, and he used them in his Australian tax fraud, falsely claiming, "That's mine, I control that." Now, ATO requested him several times to prove that by signing any of these addresses, but he managed to duck that each and every time with a plethora of excuses and even with forged emails that ATO found in their inquiry. And then his Satoshi cosplay started early 2014 to further advance his Australian tax fraud. It doesn't take much imagination to even think that the Dave Kleiman introduction in the Satoshi team can be seen as a Craig role-playing Dave, so it's also a cosplay, as he has been pretending to be Dave who was talking to himself in many forged emails. So to cut a long story short, the only thing that Craig has been building over these years is that he is now a court-approved fraud, perjurer, serial forger. Yeah, and based on the recent conversion verdict in the Kleiman case, we can also safely call him a court-approved thief. This will come to an end at some point. Sooner or later, he will meet his master. Probably not the real Satoshi Nakamoto as master, because I think that the real Satoshi Nakamoto knows very well that Craig Wright is very capable to self-destruct under the pressure of his ever-debunked false stories and unraveled forgeries. But in one of the running court cases, or maybe as a result of the still ongoing ATO criminal investigation, there will be a moment in the upcoming years that it will all come to a grinding halt.
Everything in the Craig Wright story to this point has been leading up to what will happen over the next couple of years, as Wright is tasked with following through on his countless promises to crush all comers in court, break the Bitcoin blockchain, have BSV adopted as the blockchain of choice by enterprises and governments, and, crucially, be recognised the world over as Satoshi Nakamoto. Wright is known to have a love of all things Japanese, so what would his beloved Japanese philosophers make of this mission in his life and his methods of going about it? We can turn to one famous one, who, in his 1738 work, Writings of an Old Man, had this to say. What is the way that should be followed as the way of truth in modern-day Japan? We should simply strive in all matters for what is ordinary, should be of upright heart and right conduct in our everyday activities, should speak quietly and behave with restraint. In your dealing with people, be perfectly sincere. Forbid yourself vile pleasures and have esteem for superior people. Do not despise the foolish. In general, put yourself in other people's place and do not do anything bad to them. Do not be biting and sharp. Do not misinterpret people's intentions or be obstinate. Do not be forceful and impatient. If you are angry, be so within reason. And if you are happy, do not lose control of your feelings. If you behave according to it, other people will be happy. You yourself will feel at ease, and things will always be easy to manage without difficulties. On the other hand, if you do not behave according to it, people will hate you. You yourself will feel ill at ease, and whatever you do, difficulties and obstructions will just increase. The name of this philosopher? One Tominga Nakamoto, the man that Craig Wright says makes up half the name of a certain unknown Bitcoin inventor. Arthur, it's been an absolute pleasure working with you on this series.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. It was indeed a tremendous pleasure working with you on this episode, seriously.
And on a personal note, thank you so much for giving up your time and efforts every day to share your knowledge on the continuing Craig Wright saga. Without people like you in this space, it would have been much easier for Craig Wright to pull the wool over many more eyes and get away with his schemes. So thank you for that. Hopefully this won't be the last time we speak like this.
No, I'm sure it won't be, Mark. Remember where we came from, my friend. I will never forget the moment you contacted me somewhere in August after reading my first early years article from that series that I wrote with Crypto Devil, and you suggested we should go do this podcast together. But of course, we knew each other much longer already, as you had me as a guest in your Fully Crypto podcast before. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this brought things to the next level, let's be honest. So thank you for this opportunity, and I'm sure we'll meet again.
Thank you, too, to all our wonderful listeners for sticking with us through this complex and convoluted story and for the support you've given us along the way. We hope we've managed to break this incredible tale down enough for you to make sense of the rabbit warren that it quickly turns into. Rest assured, however, there is much more to come from this story, and so we'll leave you with another quote.
Ah, this is not the end. It is not even the beginning of the end. But it is perhaps the end of the beginning.
Thanks once again for listening. And we'll see you again soon. Thank you for listening to the final episode in this series of Dr. Bitcoin, The Man Who Wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto. If you've enjoyed the series, please rate and review us on your podcast app of choice and help us spread the word. For updates on the podcast, including bonus episodes and information on our future plans, please follow us on Twitter at DrBitcoinPod. That's at DrBitcoinPod. For the latest news on Craig Wright and his ongoing court cases, follow Arthur on Twitter at MyLegacyKit. And for more in-depth reporting on the history of the Craig Wright saga, including his Fake Toshi series, please check out Arthur's Medium page, also at MyLegacyKit. If you'd like to throw us a couple of shekels or a couple of sats, you can do so via the links in the show notes. And if you'd like to contact us, you can do so via email at drbitcoinpod@gmail.com. That's drbitcoinpod@gmail.com.
You've been listening to Dr. Bitcoin, The Man Who Wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto, written by Mark Hunter, with additional material by Arthur Van Pelt, editing and production by Mark Hunter. This has been a Contented Media production.